Al?
Yeah.
This is Brent Kelly. I wrote you, I don't know, it's been a week and a half or so ago about an interview.
Yes, sir.
Is this a good time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great.
Just a minute, man. Sure. Let me go back in the bedroom where I can hear a little better.
Okay. Let me say I appreciate this very much. I know you probably got better things to do with your time. And when I was a, let's see, how old was I? 13, 14 years old.
Now,
you were.
Be careful, you're going to make me out too old here.
You were older than me then, I bet you still are. You were with Oakland, and I lived out in Los Altos, California. We went up to see a game. I think you pitched against Portland, but I couldn't swear to that now. But
I was with Oakland. I was in 55.
55, okay. I was 14 years old. And I'm not sure, maybe it was against Seattle. Anyhow, you pitched. I'd never heard of you before. But you, I don't remember. You won the game, and for some reason I took a liking to you, and I became a fan of yours from that point on. This will appear in a magazine called Sports Collector's Digest probably 6 months from now. And one of the side effects of this is the fellows get an increase in the number of autograph requests. Is that a problem?
Well, no, because I get quite a few of them anyway, and I've just had a, you know, a bit of a good fortune that last month I was selected to the Baltimore Hall of Fame, and so
oh, great.
I went up for the installation there, and of course I'm getting quite a few from that, particularly, you know, on the East Coast area.
Okay, well that's great. Well, we will definitely point that out in the interview. That's quite an honor that they've had some good.
I considered it quite an honor. It's something I didn't expect, and you know, I played for 8 years in Baltimore, and I left there in 62, and I'm the 22nd player to be selected to their Hall of Fame out of 600 and some that the players that they've had since, you know, they came back into the majors in 1954. They were the old St. Louis Browns.
Right. Now, they've had some awful good pitchers over the years, so you're in there with some good company.
Well, that's kind of the way I feel about it. So, yes, sir, mighty, you know, Palmer, and Steve Barber, a lot of those guys. Neil Pappas, Estrada. So, yes, I consider it quite an honor.
Well, it is. Well, let's start with another question I was going to get to a little later, but let's start with that. You still hold the Orioles record for consecutive shutout innings.
Well, yes, that was I think 36 consecutive shutout innings.
Do you remember that you had three complete game shutouts in there, and then parts of two other games? Is that right?
I think that was right. Now I don't recall exactly. I know I had, you know, three shutout games in a row. Let's see if I can find anything here. It just says that I just picked up this thing that was in this program that they had up there. It just said that, you know, that I had 36 consecutive scoreless innings in 1961. Which still stands as a club record. And it doesn't say who it was against or anything, and I don't know.
Well, I remember it when it was going on. I was a little older then, a little more aware of what was happening, and at that point I was following your career because, as I said, you were one of my favorites. But I sure don't remember who they were either, but I guess I can look that up in the newspapers. Okay, another occurrence in your career that very few people can lay claim to. Back in 63 with Houston, you walked only 8 batters in over 140 innings.
Well, yes, that has always been, one of my strong points. I had pretty good control. I also threw a lot of home run pitches, too.
Well, they're in strike zone, they're going to hit them every once in a while.
Right. But, yes, I did, I forgot just what it is, but back in Houston there, I did have a very few walks and a certain amount.
Well, I've got it right here. It was
exactly how many it was.
It's eight walks and 141 and 1/3 innings. But times were tough for you in Houston. You were actually till your last year. You had a winning record. Then you went 3-15 in 1964 with like a 380 earned run average, I think. So, if things were right, you'd have been better than 3-15.
Well, like I tell everybody, I had to be pitching pretty good ball. I never would have been around to lose 50.
That's right.
You know, we had a very young ball club.
Yes.
And I lost, about 8 of those games was by 1 run.
Mm.
And, when you lose 15 ball games and back then still have less than 4 earned run average, you got to be pitching pretty good ball.
That's for sure.
But we just did not, that was an expansion team, and it was the old Houston Colts, and then later named the Astros.
Right, they were still the Colts when you were with them, weren't they?
Yeah, but
yeah.
The last year I was there, they changed it to the Astros.
Was that the year they changed? Okay. That's right, you were there 2 years, right? Astros and, yeah, that's
right. And, of course, they wanted me to, stay. I was 40 years old by then.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted me to stay on as pitching coach, but I have a business here at home, and which I needed to come. I thought it could be, they needed to make room for some young players, so I didn't want to coach, and decided I came on home, and I've never been sorry of it.
Well, that's good. You don't need to look back on something anyhow. Your first year with Houston, you only had the 8 walks. You had 5 wins, and 3 of them were shutouts, so evidently to win the game, you must not have been able to give up any runs.
Well, no, not many. I don't... we just didn't score many runs in.
Right.
They had a lot of young guys that we were playing, trying to build a ball club. And, Harry Kraft was the manager, and that ball club was the old club that was in that, Southern Association.
Mm-hmm.
And we played in the old park there while they were building the Astrodome right over the left field. Also, this might be of interest, it might not, but, they played the first Sunday night baseball game that was ever played was played there in Houston.
I didn't know that.
And I was the winner of the first Sunday night baseball game that was ever played.
That's a regular thing now, but boy, back in those days, they just wasn't heard of.
Well, see, that was because it was so hot back then.
Uh-huh.
And so they requested and got permission. That stadium there didn't even have a grandstand. Everything was open.
Mm-hmm.
And they requested and got permission, and the first Sunday night Major League ball game was played there.
Well, that is interesting. Was that the year that the Astros started an all-teenage lineup one game? Or the Colt 45s in that year?
Well, it could have been. They had had some awful young players.
I remember it was. I've seen the lineup in books from time to time. I think it was 63. They had guys like Rusty Staub and...
They had Rusty Staub. They had John Bateman that was catching.
Yeah.
They had Ernie Fazzo that was out of California that came right out of college, was there. had this Larry Durker, who was 18, became a very good pitcher.
Well, he sure did till he got hurt.
Of course, then it was Franco, the team there, but a lot of the old-timers, and most of them were National Leaguers, which I didn't know much, having spent most of all my time in the American League.
Right.
But they had to, they signed everybody came down the pike there for a while.
Well, you got to start with something. Well, let's talk about you. The White Sox drafted you after 1950. Who signed you originally?
I was originally signed with Boston in 1945.
The Red Sox or the Braves?
Yeah,
the
Red Sox. See, I was playing here in North Carolina and was on the Legion team and the high school team, and we won the state championship, but I was an infielder. And the last year I pitched because we didn't have anyone else. And Bun Hearn was the coach and a scout for the Boston Red Sox at the University of North Carolina. Well, I was one of eight kids raised here in the cotton mill, and so I wanted to go to college. And the only way I could go to college was to find somebody to send me, and so Boston agreed to send me to college for 4 years if I would sign with them at the end of 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when the naturally I went through for 1 year and was playing on the team and was playing shortstop. And so in 1943 the war was already on, but I was drafted, went in service in 43 and came out and in December of 45. And so school was so crowded and everything, and Bun Hearn was still scouting for them, and I was offered more money by two other clubs that was interested in me, but I hadn't played. I was overseas, had 32 months overseas, and I didn't play while I was in the service. But anyway, Red Sox won me, and Bun Hearn, he said, I just can't give you as much money. I said, listen, they agreed to send me to school, and they've already put $1,700 in me. I said, anything close, I'll sign with the Red Sox. So I signed a Roanoke contract, which was, Roanoke was in a Class B, what was called the Piedmont League.
Mm-hmm.
And they optioned me to Durham, North Carolina, which was in the Carolina League, was Class C. So 1946 was my first year. And I played for Durham in the Carolina League, won 15 ball games in a row here my first year.
Wow.
Won 17 and lost 4, I believe it was, for the year. And so, of course, back then, they considered that you had to have experience more than anything else, and there was an awful lot of ball players around. So I went to the Piedmont League, the Roanoke, the next year. In fact, won 19 and lost 8 in Class B ball.
Led the league in wins that year.
That's right. Led more than anybody else. And from there, I went to Class A, which was Scranton.
And had another good year, Eastern League.
Right. That was Eastern League, and had a fairly good year that year. Was 13-5, and from there went to Louisville in 1949, and ended up not too good a year, 13-13, if I remember, somewhere close about that time. And this was the time that the Red Sox bought Sammy White from Seattle, Washington, on
mm-hmm.
the Coast League, the catcher. And I went to Seattle for part payment.
Were you still owned by the Red Sox at that point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in fact, see, the Red Sox bought him, and I was owned by the Red Sox in the Red Sox farm system. And I was in, Class AAA. And that's what the Coast League was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think later it became open classification or something.
They were trying to get to the majors.
Right. But anyway, I went to Seattle in 1950, and I pitched for Seattle in 50, and Chicago drafted me. I went to Chicago, and in May they didn't keep me. They sent me back to Seattle. And I went to Seattle and had a terrific year out there. And, from May on, I won 13, lost 6, and won 4 or 5 in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. 3 in the playoffs. You were 16-6 for the year.
16-6.
Yeah.
So,
and led the league in one-loss percentage.
So then Chicago bought me. And so I went to Chicago in 52. And played there in 52. And then they traded Marv Grissom and myself, and maybe it was Bill Kennedy, to Boston for Vern Stevens. So I played in Boston in 53, 54, and then it was 55 when they sold me to Oakland.
Now, they sold you, or they didn't, that was not a farming out situation, that was a sale.
It was a sale. It was outright sale. So, and Brick Laws was the owner of the Oakland Ball Club at that time. Lefty O'Doul was the manager. And so I was out there, until the All-Star break. I won, 9-3 or something.
9-2 in 2 months.
What?
9-2.
Well, you know more about it than I. I'm just trying to remember.
I got the book out here. I opened it up. I've got your record.
And so they sold me to Baltimore. And so I went to Baltimore and stayed there till 62.
Well, you became a real good pitcher with the Orioles. You had the heart of your career was there, but you became, I guess, one of the top year-in-year-out handful of pitchers in the league. Your earned run average was always, never led, but you were always in the top 10 or so, or most years you were in the top 10. Did anything change other than maturity?
Well, I think the biggest thing that changed was that maturity, but we had a better defensive ball club.
Well, that always helps, doesn't it?
And naturally, I always felt like that most clubs that I pitched for played better for me than they did a lot of the other guys because they knew I was going to make them hit the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so they played better defensive ball. If they're standing around in the infield or the outfield, and if you're going to ball two and ball three on everybody, and the first thing you know, they get where they're not as alert, I think, as they are at times.
Oh, sure, rocking back on their heels, getting bored, yes.
When I pitched, they played good defensive ball. I guess maybe it's because they knew I was going to make them hit it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And you were a relatively quick worker, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Which always helps.
I can't remember now, but I pitched, several ball games in just a little over an hour.
Well, that's the first two innings nowadays.
Yeah. But they used to always kid everybody and tell them, says, well, Brownie had pitched the last game in every town because says he's going to get it over early and we'll get out of here.
That's a good reputation to have. When you left Baltimore, they sold you to the Yankees.
Right.
That didn't seem to work out too well.
Well, of course, no, it didn't. But the Yankees, if you look at my record, I pitched a lot against the Yankees over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I always pitched good ball against them. And now, when they bought me, they bought me in September. They had no intentions at all. I'm 38 years old. they had no intentions at all of keeping me as a player.
Sure.
They thought maybe I might help them there in September because Whitey Ford was not, finishing his game. They thought maybe I could relieve and help him some, but I did not really pitch. I was in two or three games at the most. I don't remember which.
Two games.
And in fact, next year, when Houston bought me, they called me in and offered me a job if I didn't want to go to Houston. And said they'd like to have me in the organization. I said, no, I want to play.
So, well, you still had your arm. You were still a capable pitcher. There was no reason not to at that point.
Well, I certainly wasn't thinking about quitting. Not as long as I could, play. But see, I came along late. I was 27 years old before I really got to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
After having been overseas for 3 years, being in the service for 3 years, I was 21 when I started playing. So I just felt, of course, back then, there wasn't a whole lot of people played like the, when you got 35, 36 most of the time, you were pretty well through.
Yeah. Yeah, they were, if you didn't want to hang it up, they were trying to hang it up for you.
Right.
Well, you had, after you were 35, you had 22, 33, you had 37. You had nearly half your wins after 35. So you were still a pretty capable pitcher at that point. I've got this note on the side of my notes here. Why were you called skinny? You were not skinny.
Goes back to as a kid, I was real fat as a baby, and being in a southern town and one of eight children, everybody had to have a nickname.
Oh sure.
And my cousin just started calling me skinny, and it was something that just stuck with me
all the way.
And my real name was Hector, but no one ever knew that.
Yeah.
Until I got out of the service and started playing ball, I went by Harold all the time.
So your first name is Hector.
Hector Harold.
I've seen it listed both ways as Harold Hector and Hector Harold.
Right. But Hector was a name that I really didn't particularly like, so I went by Harold all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, naturally, went to service. Had to have the full name that came out, the full name. And so still there's not many people that know me by Hector. A lot of people know me as Harold Skinny Brown or Hal Brown.
Well, after this, there's going to be a lot of people know your name's Hector. Unless you don't want it known.
Well, I don't care anymore. If you get as old as I am, things don't bother you.
You have a different level of importance to certain things.
Right.
You hit two home runs. Do you remember either one of them?
I remember one of them. They say, somebody said, not in Baltimore, that I had hit one off of Bob Sullivan, but I can't say that for a fact. The one that I remember hitting more than anything else is hit one off Art Haldeman. He was with Detroit,
mm-hmm.
I was with Boston, and I beat him 4-2 one day and drove in three of the runs.
Oh boy!
I do not remember who the other one was.
That was when you were with the White Sox in 52.
Huh?
That was with the White Sox in 52, the other one. You hit one in 52 and then the one in 53 off Haldeman.
Well, you remember, more about it than I did.
Well, I got the book open. It helps a little bit.
Right. Well, I didn't know the book, had all of those details.
Well, it depends on what book you have. Before I talk to anybody, I try to find out as much as I can. Sometimes it's pretty hard, but a little digging, you can find out quite a bit of stuff because, you know, everything's public record. It's easy to dig out. Is there one game that stands out in your memory as either your best game or the biggest thrill you had or something that really stands out from your career?
Well, I would, there's several games, but I guess the one that stands out the most, I think it was probably 61 or 60 against the Yankees. I pitched a wonder. Manley hit a home run the first inning. That was the only hit they got.
I remember that.
And I think we beat them 4-1. I think Ron Hanson hit a home run later.
I think it was 1960, but that's a long time ago, and I'd have to look that up.
Right. But that was at the time, that was the first year that, you know, Baltimore had really become a contender.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing good ball, and up until, September, we were tied with the Yankees.
Well, you were right in it up for the last 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, we went into Yankee Stadium, and they beat us 4 in a row. And from there on, it was downhill. But we were tied with them, I think, up until that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Baltimore had finally overcome the St. Louis Browns and become a baseball team. Was there, or who was the best hitter that you saw, or maybe the toughest hitter on you, or maybe they're the same guy?
No, the toughest hitter on me was Yogi Berra.
Oh, a lot of guys didn't like to him.
And I don't know exactly his record, but you can go back, and Yogi was, you know, probably a lifetime 280 or 290-some hitter.
Yeah, 282, if I remember correctly, something like that, yeah.
But if you go back and look, I bet you he drove in as many winning run or tying run as Manny Ramirez.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could get him out pretty good the first part of that ball game. It'd come down to the latter part of the ball game. He'd bloop one or hit one good. But he was just, he went up there, left the dugout swinging, and anything close, he was swinging at.
The strike zone was the immediate county.
And everybody says, well, since he's a bad ball hitter, I said, yeah, but I said, you ought to see what he does with those good ones. But I think probably he was the toughest on me. And I think probably Ted Williams was the greatest hitter I think I ever saw.
Yeah, I think it's maybe safe to say.
He was probably the most scientific hitter. And I remember something, and I can't still today, I can't believe it, but I heard it out of his own mouth. But 1954, I was there when he came back from the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And St. Louis was still in the league, and Dwayne Pallette, I don't know where you remember him.
Sure do.
Tall right-hander threw a screwball.
Yeah.
And Lou Boudreau put about the seventh inning, we had one out, and we had a man on third base. And he put him in the pinch hit, and Ted Williams hit the darndest pop fly you ever saw in that infield. And he came back just to raise some sand. He says, I hit the bottom half of that ball, and says, it doesn't break as much as I thought it was going to. I don't believe anybody can pick up the spin that good, but he was good. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
to say that you hit under the bottom half of it, to see the bat hit it, to know that you're hitting the bottom half of it instead of hitting it the center is almost unbelievable.
It sure is. But if anybody could do it, I bet he could.
Well, he probably could, and I think his reflexes was so quick, he could wait for a long time and before swinging. He didn't commit himself like a lot of people. He could release real quick, and of course he also had the reputation of having a good eye, and sometimes I think a lot of people say he got four strikes, and I think maybe he did, but of course, you know, I pitched against Ted after I left there, so. And of course, Ted was a much better fastball hitter. He didn't like anybody turning the ball over, spinning it one way, and different things. It threw his timing off, and as he got older, he wasn't quite as quick. And so he didn't like when he took batting practice, he wanted everybody to hold the ball cross seam so it didn't move too much. He wanted it straight. He says, "I want to get my timing down." Says, "You're not out there to get me out now."
I remember a story when he first came back from the service, and you were probably there. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but he came back and was taking batting practice at Fenway, and he said that the home plate was out of line, and they measured it and found it was like a half inch or three quarters of an inch off. You remember that?
No, I don't remember that, but I can tell you this. When he came back, he had took batting practice, to his hands was just, both hands were just covered with blisters.
Wow. Well, that's what he was out to do, was to hit the ball.
Well, he was a whole lot better outfielder.